everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Home Practice with Hallie. I'm your host, Hallie Miraglada, here with the mission to make the tools of yoga more accessible to all bodies, no matter where in the world you make your home. On today's episode, I am joined by a very special guest, a longtime yoga practitioner, yoga teacher, accountant, and the founder of The Mindful Bookkeeper, Chioma Njaku. Chioma, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Absolutely. So your service, The Mindful Bookkeeper, is rooted in helping businesses like yoga studios increase their profits by connecting their why to their finances. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey and how you came to do this work?
Oh, yes. So the very, very summarized version of this is it's been a journey of realizing that the mind, or rather the emotions around money, is just as important as the skill. So I'm a trained accountant, like master's degree in accounting, an MBA, and work for those lovely companies like PricewaterhouseCoopers, even once ran an accounting department and lived from paycheck to paycheck, even when I had my six-figure salary. And so what I often thought was I wasn't making enough. And I would later realize that this was conditioned behavior, like emotions around money. But I thought I wasn't making enough. I thought I had a glass ceiling. And I really felt like I wasn't doing my part to contribute to society. Mm-hmm. And yoga stumbled into my life quite on accident, and I would eventually realize earlier this year that yoga has been the teacher, the gateway for me in terms of just seeing a lot. So I shifted into yoga because also while I was in my corporate life and I was starting to carry the mat around me, I would hear the executives in the office often talk about how they wish they had more time to relax their mind. They wish they had more time to work out, as they would say, because I was always, it's either the yoga mat or running shoes at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So they just wish that they had more time. And I just felt a calling, honestly, to just help, just because I heard the pain in their voices and I understood it myself. And if it wasn't them, it was because I was also into running at the time, let's just say like early 2000s. And on the other side, the runners were always getting injured, stressed about hitting their marathon time or half marathon time. So I was like, I'm going to help both people. And I'm hitting a glass ceiling. So I'm going to become a yoga teacher. And then I shifted into being a yoga teacher. And that's when I started to hear too much money talk. I completely forgot my objective. And for helping, why I wanted to become a teacher, because now came a new struggle. It was making money is not yoga-like. Oh, you're all about the money. You should charge low fees or no fees so you don't leave anyone out. You have to have a rich husband or wife to make it as a yoga teacher. And I went from living from paycheck to paycheck, essentially, to just being flat broke. Largely because in my rock bottom moment, I would say, was when I had to decide between putting gas in my car to go and teach a yoga class or feed my dog. And I was doing, at the time, the classic going from studio to studio teaching yoga classes. I want to do this full time. So at least when I was in corporate, I could still go to work. In this case, when I was a yoga teacher, I realized I needed money to continue serving. And so I honestly, that was a wake up call for me. Mm-hmm. That and moving in with mom and dad at 35 won't be anyone's wake up call.
Yeah.
So that's how I eventually shifted into doing what I do now. It's really just building a healthy relationship with money and helping others have that healthy relationship with money. So it's not always about the money. It's about doing what you love and making a difference.
Definitely. I really appreciate that you brought up that idea that making money or making a living teaching yoga is somehow antithetical to yoga itself. How have you kind of overcome that? Or do you work with clients who still believe that?
Yes. And yeah, so yeah, the latter question, yes, I do work with clients, and our work together is part of the journey is to overcome that, because without that healthy relationship with money, you won't budget, you won't, you'll pretty much what we were, we're so smart. And as human beings, we are so intelligent. We will find ways to get rid of that money, and we are not conscious of it. We'll be asking like, where did the money go? And in terms of me, my way, I had to meet myself, I suppose, where I already was, meaning I'm an accountant. And so of course I went to one of those, what I call the skill-based books. My game changer was a book called Profit First. And it put a structure and a system in place. I read this book and it showed me how to organize my finances. And so my light bulb moment was, for the 13 years I was in corporate, I never paid attention to how creative one can be with organizing their finances. But it took me pretty much being stripped of everything to finally see that I could tailor organizing my finances to myself. So this book specifically showed me that, because I was still teaching yoga and I was bringing in only $350 per month, this book showed me that I can move a percentage of money from my checking to savings first before paying bills. So even that was just kind of like a whoa. But I started with moving just 1%. Like I'll get paid, move 1% of the checks I deposit to my savings account. And that was the practice. And I had to prove to myself that I could manage money. And that was from there, that's when I started to overcome, like take a look at my emotions. Like, how did I get here? Why did I get here? Why are other people here? But I need an incentive, honestly.
Yeah. So it sounds like awareness of your money is a great first step, and incremental savings. What other first steps are necessary in changing your relationship to money?
It's really important to become aware of the of your surroundings. So that includes like what you consume on the news. We're adults now, so what we consume on the news or any TV program, what we see on Instagram, what we read, the friends, like our family, like what they talk about, how they say it. If you start to pay attention to the money language, we hear it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, actually, I'll leave politics out of this. I will go to even, I watch Real Housewives of whatever. I have no shame in saying that, because actually it's such great, like, besides it being just wildly entertaining at times, it is such great lessons on like what not to do.
Yeah.
And so when I hear these housewives, and what I know of a housewife growing up are like, mothers like taking their kids to sports games and school and picking up from school. I don't know about this glam squad following people around in town, but what I saw for Real Housewives of Atlanta, for example, and Real Housewives of New Jersey, there were episodes where the housewives, at least one, was making fun of the practical housewife for like a child having a pizza party. And what I noticed was that the audience or like the followers were like, hey, why didn't you bring horses or ponies or shut down the streets? And so what that showed me is this TV, this program is programming us to have an expectation as to how we should handle our finances.
Mm.
And so that's one example. And
Sorry, just to clarify that. So first step is kind of examining your environment to see what stories you're being told about money.
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. I know I like to journal. This is another step. I like to journal. I think many of us do journal to a certain degree. I would say, ask yourself, like, what beliefs do you have about money?
Mm.
And just be very honest. And it's amazing when you put that pen to paper the thoughts just start flowing. And therefore, you'll read what you really believe, like that subconscious programming. And the idea is to just become, once you, whatever you're aware of, you can change. So this is the important part here. It's just developing that awareness, which is what you asked me. But like, yeah, just be, I believe in just writing down, what are your beliefs? What are your thoughts? And then also becoming aware of your surroundings, those two things.
Definitely. What would you, do you get objections from clients who are like, what I know about money is that like, I don't have enough of it to even make a difference. What, like, do you hear things like that? And if so, like, what is the first step if you truly, you know, like you said, you're making $350 a month as a yoga teacher. I taught yoga full-time for like almost 8 years. I know it can be so challenging to make a living, and even just like that kind of poverty mindset of like, I'm never going to make this money. Do you think the first step is saying like, I can make money? Do you think that mindset makes that much of a difference?
It does. It does. Even when you first say that, you probably won't believe it. But I really believe it's saying, it's the willingness to step into a new result. So that's the first step. It's being willing. And then me personally, I like two steps. Whenever I have, cause I work with my clients all the time with this, where they're like, I can't make a difference. I don't make enough. And then my question is, do you look at your numbers? And the answer is often, no, I'm afraid to. So it's really about proving it to yourself, right? So look at the numbers, and then you see for yourself where your money is flowing to. And really understanding that we're all in control of how our cash flows in and flows out. We really are. We've just allowed other people, other things, other circumstances to take that power away from us, or have us believe that we are not in control, but we are in control. So I think it's really about, first of all, the willingness to shift, to create that new result. Go ahead and take a look at what's going on with your finances. Understand where your money is flowing. Become aware of those beliefs that are encouraging those actions, because we are taking actions based off of our beliefs. And it's work, but it's actually not that difficult to change. Like, a little really can go a long way.
Yeah. You mentioned that step, that first step you took of moving like 1% over into savings. Do you have other really concrete, kind of accessible little nuggets like that, that you offer?
Sure. So the 1% can be daunting for some people, because if you believe you don't have any money to save, no matter what I say, you won't take that step.
Yeah.
So I think it's really also about like building that relationship with your money, meaning look at your bank accounts, like just log in. Actually remember your bank passwords. It's no shame if you don't remember. It happens. When we don't want to know something, we forget. So reconnect with your money in that regard, in terms of like remembering your bank passwords. And then log in, just look at the balance, and that's it. Go about your business. Mm-hmm. Do that for like as long as you need to, because then the curiosity will take over. You'll start to notice the shift, that the balance moves a certain way. Maybe it's up, maybe it's down, and you're like, why does it move? And then that's when you'll start to take a deeper look. So, but it all really starts with, get your bank passwords, all of them, yeah. and start looking. Just look at the balance and then go about your business. That takes you, honestly, like a minute or two. Do that for like 7 straight days and start building that curiosity.
And then what's the next step?
The next step, I love that 1% rule. I'm so amazed at how the one thing I hear, especially with the pandemic, with this year, I've heard and I've been told, I wish I saved more money. We don't have to wish anymore. We can start. I love the 1% rule, because the 1% is really, you're not going to miss. Many of us don't miss $3. Or $20 per month. Mm-hmm. We spend that easily without even realizing it. So if we can get into the habit of any time we receive money, whether it's an unemployment check or an employment check or money from your business, before you spend it on anything, spend it on you. Take 1%, 0.01 times what comes in, and practice moving it to your savings. If most people are like most people, and no shame, I was like that too, that savings account is probably never used. So this is an opportunity to start practicing moving money to the savings account. And the benefit of it is you won't notice that amount missing, and you build that comfort and confidence that, hey, you can save money. Life won't end. And you can still do the things that you like to do.
Mm-hmm. You have a really great, I've watched a few of your videos where you talk about how a really common budgeting recommendation is like, oh, just don't go buy the coffee, or don't go buy the little thing that makes you so happy. And you mentioned that it's like, well, if the coffee makes you really happy, that might be a $3 that you do want to spend, you know? So what do you think is the line between like smart cutting things out and budgeting and like choosing to spend money on things that you like for yourself?
Oh gosh. I have to tell you, I cannot stand the cut coffee comments. I cannot stand it, because we are so literal. We will cut those coffees or we sneak it in. And I see a lot of sneaking around. We shouldn't have to sneak around for our own money. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
If you like money, I mean, the money is yours. Spend it the way you want to spend it. I don't care. Me personally, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care how you spend your money. We make money to make us happy. So before I go too far to the left with this rant, the thing about the cutting coffees and dinners is that we focus only on the cutting coffees and dinners and not the other things that are truly leaking our cash.
Mm.
So we're ignoring the late fees. Or the late payments. We're ignoring the 60 different streaming devices that we're paying for right now during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
We are ignoring the student or the clients that didn't pay us or did pay, but for some reason there was a tech glitch and the money didn't transfer. So instead of focusing on the coffees and the dinners, and I'll get to that in a second, because I'm going to come back for sure. Look at the other, this is also why you develop that relationship with your bank accounts. You take a look and you see where your money is really going and what hasn't come in. This is developing an expectation. Mm-hmm. So we need to go beyond the coffees and the dinners. We need to take it a step further, like go beyond. In terms of that balance, we don't know what we want, Hallie. That's the thing. We've had so many people tell us what we should have, to the point where this is where that guilt and that shame comes in. Even for teaching yoga, I don't know why it's a thing for the yoga teacher to have this broke rite of passage. Mm. I don't know. It doesn't make sense, because putting myself in the shoes of a student, I don't really care what the yoga teacher makes. I care for my transformation. So we have to be firm and confident in what we want and what in our needs. And I know that there's so much judgment out there about being greedy and about being materialistic. We need to let that go. So that is why actually rewarding yourself with the occasional cup of coffee or a dinner, that's a good thing, because we're meant to enjoy this life. And in the process, naturally, when we're happier, we're grateful. Gratitude is very expansive. It brings more opportunities to you.
I like thinking about this idea of like a cup of coffee versus the 60 streaming platforms that you have as like knowing if you have a leak in your faucet or your pipe, or just like turning the faucet on. Like if you want water, you just turn the faucet on. But if it's just leaking constantly, that's not super helpful. So I think what you're saying is being purposeful with like the stream of your money and knowing where it's going.
Yep.
That's very empowering. I know that in, you know, yoga and wellness industry, and you know this very well, many individuals open yoga studios because they love yoga and they want to help people, but they may not have much business experience. Would you be able to identify some common pitfalls that you see when you start working with business clients?
Oh, yes. A lot of free and discounts. And free and discounts are not a bad thing when used appropriately. But what happens is yoga studio owners and teachers, this is why I say we need to be very clear and confident in our why, like why we are yoga teachers, why we have this studio. And we think it's the student's scarcity, like the student doesn't have any money, but really it's our own scarcity mindset that we're projecting to our students. And so in working with a few now, they're online now, but they have confessed that they trained their community to only purchase packages around Black Friday, that they won't pay because it was, I suppose they weren't willing to pay. Let me put it that way. They trained them to pay for, look for that discount. They confessed that they didn't believe that their work was valuable. And that saddened me, actually.
Yeah.
So that the only way to get people in was to discount it or make it free around Black Friday. And that's almost every single person I've worked with.
Not a great long-term business strategy, for sure, if you want to stay open.
Yeah. Or if that's your thing, if you're like, okay, I make most of my money around Black Friday, plan for it.
Yeah. So when you work with clients to connect their why to their finances, can you walk us through that process of finding your why for your money?
Sure. So I just simply ask, why are you in business? And oftentimes I don't get an answer. I get the, I don't know, which is okay. Mm-hmm. It's a good place to start and it's honest. So then that's when I show them, because at that time I've had a good look at their numbers, and I'll say that I can tell you don't know because it's not, there's no consistency in your numbers. So, and then I ask them a few questions, not to belittle them, but just to drive the point home. Like, do you know why you're spending money on, for example, MailChimp, the email platform? And they don't know. Or they heard that's what they should use. Okay. Do you know why you use MindBody? I don't know. Everyone else is using it. Mm-hmm. So we just go through the process of understanding like how each expense, it's how, first of all, money has to circulate. So the money goes out is to also serve. And we just reframe like what each expense is for. And it helps them get into their why. And then I ask the main question, why do your students come to you? Mm-hmm. And if they don't know, I said, ask. That's a good place to start. Ask. So my work is like the back end of everything. It's the result. And that's when I point out, this is why you look at your numbers. You're checking, you're making sure that everything cash wise or expense and income wise supports why you are serving.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we really get to. When we start to get to that point, that's where the magic really happens. I'm sorry, go right ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say magic as in, okay, money's being saved. Now they understand like the actions to take to reach the students. Communication is improved and it's like the dance between the back end supporting what's going on in the front end and the front end supporting what's going on in the back end. So
I was going to ask if you feel like you've seen any correlation between businesses that have more successful finances and businesses that have a strong mission statement. Like, do you feel like if you know your why very thoroughly, it'll immediately trickle into your finances?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
You let everyone else know as a business owner. If the business is pretty strong on its why, it's easy to communicate with the people that are looking for that service, and it shows up in your finances.
Do you use any type of like envisioning or like reflective journal questions or anything like that when you're helping clients discern their why?
I do. I will, in the sense of, so I love tracking finances. That's the nerd in me. And I love it because that to me in itself is a journal exercise. And the questions that I'll ask is for every month we go through are, who are your influences? You know, how do you feel? And that's very important. What came up when you, events like the election, how did that impact and influence you? And just those simple questions get like a flood of answers, a big response. And we just talk it through and make the connection as to how the person's actions, which whether they journal it or not, how their actions show up in the finances.
Has anything changed about your financial recommendations to clients during the last 9 months or so of this pandemic?
I would say I personally have changed. I still at times dance with my own scarcity. Like, will anyone take to this? Can they handle it? Right. There's more of, can they handle it? That was my biggest question earlier in this year. That's a reflection of me. So, I change in that I'm bringing it. I'm not holding back, meaning that I realize I can't be the cheerleader anymore. I can't be like, yes, you can do it. It's okay. Like, I have to call out lovingly, of course, the behaviors. I have to call out the sabotages, because that's why I'm hired to help. And if I'm just sitting by, that to me is obvious, but to the person it's not. But I'm afraid to speak because I want to be nice. That's not being nice at all.
Yeah. Especially with the urgent, I feel like the pandemic in many ways kind of revealed a lot of areas that were very urgent before, but it was easy to kind of cover them up. So I definitely, you know, I work in sales for yoga studios. So I see a lot of that urgency coming through now as people kind of scramble to smooth out their business plan, you know, to adjust to the changes. So definitely I can see why you've shifted from being the cheerleader to being like the straight shooter. Like, look, we need to make adjustments. What kind of, we've talked about like the shame and the guilt surrounding money, the sneaking around. What other emotional components of money are there?
I would say those are the big ones, the shame, the sneaking around. I didn't mention denial. Denial is a big one. oftentimes when I first connect with a client or anybody, it seems like everybody knows the money mindset game. They can talk me under the table. That's cool. But when it comes to practice, that mindset, rather the positive vibes, the journaling, the gratitude, all of that, we still can't translate that into managing the money. Mm-hmm. So that to me is denial. Maybe the person's in progress of doing the, as they say, fake it till you make it. And that's fine too. But at a certain point, I find that there's a lot of talk. Action also needs to support the talk. And through action, you can understand what else needs to be shifted.
Yeah. And in addition to the services that you offer, and you have a few different services, you do one-on-one, you do bookkeeping and master your money. Do you want to share a little bit about your different services that you offer?
Sure. So my focus for now, just because it's just been what's been requested, and I think it's what's needed. Two options. It's really financial coaching. That's a one-on-one. And depending on how, I'm always looking at your numbers, so that's a given. Depending on how long term the person and I work together, that then I'll add in the bookkeeping to kind of just get my hands in a bit more. But the financial coaching is really that blend of improving the mindset, rather the emotions around money, and the skill. And the budgeting, and there's many different types of budgets, I might add. using the software, even preparing for taxes. Taxes are a big one. Just the general process, the handling the money doesn't happen if your emotions are not that great. Your emotions don't have to be perfect, but your emotions need to just be better than bad. So I work, our time one-on-one is really, it's what's going on outside of your financial life and how is that impacting your financial life? And let's just create a personalized plan. So that's that one. Master Your Money just really came forward with what I saw of the pandemic. And I wanted to reach more people. And speaking of affordable, I didn't want money to be the reason why one couldn't master their money. So it's a supplement and it's also a start. And it's really more so it's also blending that mindset with the skill set and helping a person understand that your desires or your why comes first. Then you discover what beliefs are supporting what's showing up in your finances currently, taking out those old beliefs, replacing them with the new, and just more tips and tricks in terms of how to make room for your money, how to know your own patterns, and just take control, just master your money, really.
Yeah. Have you utilized any types of resources or would be able to recommend any other cool books or people that you follow for inspiration in money or finance if people are looking to build that really basic skill set?
Sure. I love books. I appreciate when I work with anybody or talk to people because they're always like, have you read? And I'm like, no, I haven't yet. And then I try it and it all works. So... a few skill books that I recommend that do work, by the way, too. Huge fan of Profit First by a guy named Mike Michalowicz. That was my personal game changer book. I think everyone in the US have heard of Dave Ramsey. So, Complete Guide to Money. I believe that's what he uses in his Financial Peace University. So that's another great book. Another guy named Ramit Sethi, I Will Teach You to Be Rich. That's another book I can recommend. And I have to throw out our former presidential candidate, Elizabeth Warren. She and her daughter wrote All Your Worth, and that's another skill book.
I haven't read that. Thank you for the
reco. Check that out. That's great. And one more shout out for the Aussies, The Barefoot Investor. Highly recommend that one too.
Okay, wonderful. And you obviously have so many resources as well. Would you like to share with our listeners your website and your social media handles if they would like to follow you?
I am back on Instagram again. So my IG handle is Mindfully Chiama. Mindfully, and then my name is spelled Chioma, and that's M as in Mary. And then my website is called The Mindful Bookkeeper.
.com. And I'll link those in the show notes for our listeners so they can continue to find all of the wonderful resources that you offer. Chioma, this has been really wonderful getting to speak with you about money and finance, especially in yoga. Do you have any last pieces of advice for folks out there who are working as yoga teachers or have a yoga business?
Sure. I'm actually going to leave this with an analogy. Let's see if this lands. We already know how to track and monitor our finances, our cycle, like the cycle. And we know how to do this because I think most of us, I'd like to believe most of us have taken an Uber. So here's the process. When you get into your Uber app, the first thing you must do is set a destination. That's your why. So then that destination goes out to the Uber universe and a car connects with you. That car is your money. So your money's coming to pick you up. And I'm sure if you like me, you're tracking the time, maybe 10 minutes away, it's 5 minutes away. And then your Uber arrives. That's your money coming into your bank account. So now you get into your Uber and now it's off to your destination. Now, I'm still always tracking to see what route we're going in the Uber. And so this is essentially you tracking where your finances, your money's flowing to, and then you get to your destination, right? You achieve your why. So the Uber process is your financial management journey.
That totally landed with me.
Good. Sometimes my analogies fall flat, but good.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And if only we were checking our finances as much as I'm refreshing my screen to see where is my Uber, you know, we'd have a lot more awareness around money. That's a really interesting point. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Yeah, this has been really wonderful. And again, I appreciate you taking the time to share your expertise and your wisdom. And I am so grateful that you were here.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for your time.